Good afternoon. I'm Roger Watterson, and this is Sunday Opinion. Public indifference and complacency is the biggest danger to the future well-being of the Isle of Man. Well, that was a lift taken from the Treasury Minister's speech to Tynwald some years ago now, in the period after the 2001 general election. Well, it's easy to let things wash over us and decisions to be made for us. After all, that's what we elected members of the House of Keys to do. But their decisions are supposed to be made on informed and balanced facts and, in the absence of a party system, unfortunately, politicians tend to receive advice from one source only, usually from within the civil service and the establishment administration. And this is where the various action groups come into their own, usually voluntary organisations, often with the willing help of experienced professionals, given the opposite view, often directly opposing the government's plans. For example, in the days before the incinerator, or energy from waste plant as it was renamed, there was an enormous non-stop activity from environmental groups such as Friends of the Earth and Zero Waste Man. The site for the incinerator ash is still causing much argument. The latest government plan to produce a hostile response from the environmentalists is the announcement that the DHSS and its Public Health Division are considering the fluoridation of the public water supply. Doctors Kishore and Emerson from Public Health have made no bones about it. They believe it to be in the interests of the dental health of the Isle of Man that this should be done. The Isle of Man campaign for non-fluoridated tap water holds the opposite view. They say the issues in this debate are far more important than is immediately obvious, and issues of side effects, chemical dangers, the effects on mental health, illegal mass medication, and the tampering of foodstuffs are just a few of the issues that must be investigated. This important public issue was discussed on Sunday Opinion a few weeks ago, when Dr. Doug Cross and Dr. Paul Emerson aired their views. However, it would appear that the department's plans are rolling on with a view to obtaining Tynwald approval to go ahead with the adding of fluoride to the public water supply, and for the money to do it sometime next year. The non-fluoridated water campaigners organised a public meeting to debate the subject, and this took place last Tuesday in the Promenade Methodist Church on Loch Promenade. The DHSS Minister Eddie Teer was in support of this event when he said, "This debate is vital, and it's very important the Isle of Man government is able to gauge public opinion regarding the issue of water fluoridation." The DHSS cooperated in the staging of this meeting by arranging for the internationally acknowledged expert in the subject to speak at it. Professor Lennon OBE from the Sheffield University is the chair of the British Fluoridation Society. The other side of the coin was represented by Dr. Paul Connett, PhD, who is a professor of chemistry, originally from Cambridge, and now at St. Lawrence University and executive director of Fluoride Action Network. The two speakers spoke on Tuesday at some length on their subject, Professor Lennon for some 30 minutes, and Dr. Connett for 45. But in today's programme, we bring you an edited version of the talks, together later on with just a flavour of the questions and comments from the floor afterwards. So the issue is to put fluoride or not to put fluoride in the public water supply of the Isle of Man. The reasons for and the reasons against. And we start today with Professor Michael Lennon speaking for.
The concept of water fluoridation is not a new idea. It's not something which we dreamt up at Sheffield Dental School in the research labs a couple of years ago. The research on fluoridation, the research on fluoride in water, goes back to the 1920s and 1930s. And much of the early research was concerned with fluoride and naturally present in drinking water. And along with many other elements in our diet, there's a possibility of having too much fluoride, and there's a possibility of having too little. And so the balance we're talking about is what I would call the optimal level for dental health. And this optimal level in a temperate climate like our own would be about 1 milligram of fluoride per litre of water, or more commonly, one part of fluoride per million parts of water. In Britain, about 500,000 people are currently drinking water with fluoride at the level of one part per million and naturally present. It's been there for generations, and they get clear benefits. So people living in Hartlepool, in parts of Durham, in Lincolnshire, in Essex, in Derbyshire, are drinking naturally fluoridated water, and their parents and grandparents have done the same before them. Worldwide, about 50 million people are drinking water which is naturally fluoridated at this optimal level. So inevitably, people began to say, well, if fluoride naturally present has these beneficial effects, is it possible to supplement a water supply where fluoride is low and duplicate these natural effects? And the first attempt, and this is the process of water fluoridation, the first attempt at supplementing the water supply was carried out in a city called Grand Rapids in the United States, somewhere near Chicago, in 1946, just over 60 years ago. And that scheme was very successful and was quickly replicated in Canada and three other major studies in the United States, and subsequently in New Zealand, in Australia, in the UK and in East Germany. And these studies were all quite consistent and showed a clear benefit for dental health, very similar to the benefits seen with fluoride naturally present. Around the world now today, around about 350 million people are benefiting from water fluoridation. And in the UK, about 5.5 million people. The biggest populations are in the West Midlands, around Birmingham, and also in the northeast around Newcastle, which have been fluoridated since their local councils decided back in the early 1960s. So the city of Birmingham has been fluoridating its water supply since 1964. Looking specifically at the United States, and I emphasize the United States because that is a country where individual liberties are given great emphasis. In the United States, 170 million people are currently drinking fluoridated water. Of the 50 largest American cities, 46 are currently fluoridated. So if you go to your holidays in New York or Washington or Orlando, Los Angeles, San Francisco, you'll be drinking fluoridated water. My daughter and her young child, my granddaughter, live in New York, and they're consuming fluoridated water, and I'm delighted that they are. The people in New York have been consuming fluoridated water for just over 50 years. Lawyers, doctors, dentists, toxicologists all live in New York and are drinking fluoridated water. And as far as I know, there have been no successful challenges in any of the New York courts. I'm asked occasionally about the technical aspects of fluoridation, and the chemicals that can be added to water in the UK are specified in the appropriate legislation, most recently the Water Act of 2003. In addition, the dosing procedures, the quality of the chemicals, the quality standards they have to achieve, the transportation, the monitoring, are laid down by our Department of the Environment, and particularly the Drinking Water Inspectorate, who monitor the regulations and their application by the water companies. There's quite a variation in the levels of dental disease in the UK. And there are parts of the UK, the home counties of England, where dental disease is now so low that water fluoridation is really redundant, is no longer even worth thinking about. The levels of disease are so low and the benefits would be so marginal. But there are other parts, particularly where I live in Greater Manchester, Glasgow, Belfast, where the levels of disease are still very high and where fluoridation is still an important objective. Currently about 10% of our population are drinking fluoridated water, and I'd like to see that figure increase to about 30%. So I'm not arguing for universal fluoridation, but I'm asking for fluoridation to be targeted to those areas where there is highest need. The difference in children living in Greater Manchester and children living in Birmingham is really quite startling. If you talk to any dentist who's worked in those two communities, you will get that confirmation quite straightforwardly. But the dental data, the statistics also confirm that finding. So the levels of disease in Greater Manchester is about twice the level of that in Birmingham. And particularly the levels of severe disease, which require the child to have extractions, and usually under general anaesthetic, are particularly different, particularly marked. And so the difference between Manchester and Birmingham is about fivefold. I asked my colleagues here in the Isle of Man recently, about 2 weeks ago, to let me have the data for children being admitted to Noble Hospital to have anaesthetics, to general anaesthetics, and teeth extracted. And these are children under 10. And I was really quite astonished with the figures. They're even worse than Manchester. And I had thought up until a fortnight ago that the figures for Manchester were worse, the worst in certainly in England. I was astonished by the number of anaesthetics that are being given to children on the Isle of Man. And why that is, I'm not absolutely sure. We use an index called the number of decayed, missing and filled teeth. In the northwest, around about, that's Greater Manchester, 200 teeth affected per 100 children. And the Isle of Man, 189 teeth. So quite similar between the Isle of Man and Greater Manchester. In fluoridated West Midlands, in fluoridated Birmingham, about half that level, 102 teeth per 100 children. So there's really quite a difference, even by 5 years of age. Looking at the children who require general anaesthetics, to make this comparable, we've calculated the rate per 100,000 population. So I've taken a population just a little bit bigger than the Isle of Man and calculated similar rates for the West Midlands and for Greater Manchester. The figures for Greater Manchester, 136 children per 100,000. The figures for Birmingham and the Black Country, very similar social mix, much, much lower at 30. The figures for the Isle of Man really astonish me. In fact, they're so high, 267, I asked our colleague at the hospital to recheck those figures for us. And they did and confirmed them. And these are really very high. So a very large number of children in the Isle of Man are being admitted to Noble Hospital. It's an expensive procedure. It takes up scarce anaesthetist's time. It takes up scarce theatre time. It's scarce nursing and surgeon time. But putting all that aside, it is really for a 5, 6, 7-year-old child a really traumatic experience. And one of my research interests are adults who are anxious and frightened of dental treatment. And when you talk to them, you start to go back in their history what really initiated these levels of anxiety, which sometimes can be really quite pathological. They will often go back to childhood experiences of having teeth taken out under gas at the dentist, waking up with blood in their mouths. And those children will go on for months and sometimes for years with a real anxiety, not only for dentists, but also they'll be getting anxious about anybody in a white coat. So this is a traumatic experience for young children. I'm looking again at the numbers of decayed, missing and filled teeth. And this time, I'm looking at different social classes. So I'm looking at social class 1 and 2, 3, 4 and 5. Social class 1 and 2 would be children whose parents may be doctors or dentists or lawyers. And social class 4 and 5 would be parents who may be farm labourers or unskilled workers. And we know that the levels of dental disease in the lower social class is always much higher than in the higher social class. And if I look at smoking, or who eats 5 portions of fruit a day, we see the same social class gradient. If we bring in some new health education initiative, it's usually social class 1 and 2 who take up the advice first. In fact, usually in social class 1 and 2, it's doctors. If we look in the 1950s, when rationing of cigarettes stopped and smoking consumption really started to increase, the one group going against the trend were doctors. They tend to adopt these behaviours first, and then the rest of us, and then move down the social class. And often there's a long delay before social class 4 and 5 will take on these important health behaviours. So it's very easy to say, well, we should do more health education, we just give them advice and the mothers can make the choices. Those choices are not so difficult. If you're living on the Isle of Man, you're well educated, you've got a good income, a nice house, fine. If you're living in inner Liverpool, a single parent, woman with three young children, low income, poor housing, insecure job, these issues are not quite so straightforward. Fluoridation benefits all social classes, but the biggest difference is seen in social class 4 and 5, for the children with the highest levels of disease. And so everybody benefits, children and adults, but the particular benefits are children of the poorest families. The efficacy and safety of water fluoridation have been endorsed by a whole range of medical organisations, the World Health Organisation, the Royal College of Physicians, the British Medical Association, continue to endorse fluoridation as a safe and effective public health measure. The Royal College of Physicians, the National Health Service Centre for Reviews and Dissemination, and most recently, the Medical Research Council. There is, I understand and I accept, an ethical debate about fluoridation. Some people may argue, well, yes, children of poorer families may get some benefit. Why should I take fluoride water so that other children can benefit? I prefer not to take fluoride water. And some people go further and say not to take fluoridated water is a fundamental right. Well, I don't agree. It's a preference. You may prefer not to take fluoridated water, but if we have a public water supply, as we do here on the island, then we have to really make some compromises. We can't all say to the water company how we'd like our water to be. My wife prefers soft water. It seems that the washing is much better when the water's soft. In Manchester, we have very soft water. I personally would prefer hard water. Hard water is good for your heart. You're much less likely to get heart disease, and if you do get it, you're much less likely to die if you drink hard water. So what happens? What's the water company going to do? My wife goes down and says, I want it soft. I go down and say, I want it hard. My father comes along and says he thinks there's too much chlorine in Manchester water. He wants less chlorine in it. It's clearly, if we all had the right to say to the water company what we wanted in our water, we'd really be talking about anarchy. And so we have to leave these decisions to an informed body, the health authority, the parliament, the government. And so I had the opportunity, and I was delighted to have the opportunity, to talk to your members of parliament, who will eventually make the decision. And that's absolutely correct. There's sometimes a feeling, and the radio and newspapers pick this up, that there's really very strong views about fluoridation. There are some strong views, but it's certainly a minority view. We have been monitoring public opinion for about 20 years. We regularly commission major public opinion surveys by national public opinion pollsters, Gallup and particularly NOP. And the results are consistent. The proportion of the population who think it's sensible to add fluoride to water is usually between 60 and 80%. Those who oppose water fluoridation is usually around 15 to 20%, and those who don't know, somewhere between 10 and 20%. And that's a consistent finding. The differences are the people, by and large, who support fluoridation, the 60 to 80%, think that the health authorities should get on with it. A lady on this morning's radio program said exactly that. Why don't you just get on with it and stop messing about? Whereas the minority who oppose it with some degree of passion. And I have to respect that, and I have met many people over many years now who really do feel strongly. And I understand and accept and acknowledge your right to make those passionate feelings felt. But it is a minority view. Finally, in the UK, in Britain, or in England rather, these are the sort of regulations that we have to go through, the consultations we need to go through before the health authority can make a decision. So recently Parliament had a very detailed debate about fluoridation, and in both Houses of Parliament, in the House of Lords and in the House of Commons, there were free votes, not whipped votes, but free votes, and on each occasion both Houses voted in favour of fluoridation. But they did so with a proviso. They said the decision would be made by the health authorities, But before the health authority makes a decision, they should go through a process of public debate and public consultation. And again, I think that's absolutely right and proper. And I understand that's the process we're going through on the Isle of Man at the moment. And so I've been delighted to have a chance of taking part in that public debate.
That was Professor Michael Lennon supporting the fluoridation of the public water supply. After the break, we'll hear the argument against from Dr. Paul Connett.
Canalcraft's team of highly skilled staff have benefited from working in the Island, UK, Germany and Holland. This makes Panelcraft the only true BMW repair specialist. In fact, whatever your make of car, with over 250 years of collective working knowledge, Panelcraft are experts in all aspects of vehicle repair. A fact that can't be equaled. Choose where your vehicle's repaired. Choose Panelcraft of Tramode. Telephone 666555, that's 666555, and discover why it's no accident, they're the best.
Can I see Santa?
Yes, I'll be at the Hospice Cares Christmas Fair with stalls full of wonderful gifts for Christmas, the annual Christmas raffle, a nearly new boutique, and a kid's zone to explore.
Great, something for everyone. Where's it at?
At the Villa Marina on Saturday the 24th of November from 2 till 6 and Sunday the 25th of November from 11 till 4.
Please, can we all go, Mum?
I'd better get ready then. See you there. Ho, ho, ho.
When Kaupthing Bank acquired the Singer and Friedlander Group, a world-class bank was born. So if you're looking for a tailored private banking service, look no further than Kaupthing Singer and Friedlander. With our award-winning Platinum Offshore Notice account, you can enjoy outstanding interest rates on sterling, US dollars or euros. Ready for a different kind of service from a new breed of bank? Call Kaupthing Singer and Friedlander on 699-222. Licensed by the Financial Supervision Commission for Banking and Investment Business.
I've got a six. Great!
Ah, but you've landed on my biggest house. That'll be £500 rent.
I always knew you'd be a ruthless landlord. I'd be homeless if you had your way.
When it comes to getting professional help with property issues, including conveyancing, buying and selling and property law, go directly to Quinn Neal Advocate, 50 Athol Street, Douglas, or call 623195. Quinn Neal Advocates, they take the chance out of property.
Christian Dior, Diesel, Max Mara, Marc Jacobs, Gucci, Giorgio Armani, Emporio Armani, Valentino, Polo Sport, Pierre Cardin, Ralph Lauren, Boucheron, Yves Saint Laurent. Outside Adler and Vanderplank, sight is our business, style is our aim. We want you to look your best. That's why we stock probably the widest range of designer glasses on the island. For glasses, sunglasses, contact lenses or home visits, think Sadler and Vanderplank in Douglas. Call 673-643.
Christmas fun begins on December the 6th with Manx Radio's 12 Days of Christmas.
Every weekday, every hour.
You're in with a chance of winning great prizes from our business partners, including Euromax, Mobile World and WH Looney Ramsey, Kendrive, Lloyd's Pharmacies, Watson's Nurseries, Island Aquatics, Health and Fitness at Mount Murray, Ramsey Music Supplies, Bordello's Wine Bar, Moore's Traditional Curious and Charles Alexander Jewelers.
Great fun, great prizes.
Starting December the 6th, Manx Radio's 12 Days of Christmas.
The sound of good life.
In Sunday Opinion today, we're featuring an edited version of the talks given at last Tuesday's public meeting, which was organised by the Isle of Man campaign for the non-fluoridation of tap water. The argument against adding fluoride to our tap water was put by Dr. Paul Connett.
Thank you, Professor Lennon, for debating this issue. I've waited 10 years for this opportunity, and it's most exciting and gracious of you to debate. As Joseph Chaubert said in France, it is better to debate an issue without resolving it than resolving it without debating it. Dr. Lennon is chairman of the British Fluoridation Society. I want to draw your attention to this letter from Professor Sheldon, who was the chairman of the advisory group for the York Review, which he cited several times. He wrote this to the House of Lords. He said, it's particularly worrying then that statements which mislead the public about the review's findings, this is the York Review, have been made in press releases and briefings by the British Dental Association, British Medical Association, the National Alliance for Equity in Dental Health, and the British Fluoridation Society. I'd like to correct some of these errors. He goes on to say, whilst there is evidence that water fluoridation is effective at reducing caries, the quality of the studies were generally moderate. and the size of the estimate benefit, only of the order of 15%, is far from massive. The review found water fluoridation to be significantly associated with high levels of dental fluorosis, which was not characterized as just a cosmetic issue. The review did not show water fluoridation to be safe. There was little evidence to show that water fluoridation has reduced social inequities in dental health. The review could come to no conclusion as to the cost effectiveness of water fluoridation or whether there are different effects between natural and artificial fluoridation. Probably because of the rigor with which this review was conducted, these findings are more cautious and less conclusive than in most previous reviews. The review team was surprised that in spite of the large number of studies carried out over several decades, there was a dearth of reliable evidence which to inform policy. Until high-quality studies are undertaken, providing more definite evidence, there will continue to be legitimate scientific controversy over the likely effects and costs of water fluoridation. I would like to point out that fluoridation has long been promoted based upon endorsements from the dental and public health establishments, and you heard a few tonight. Citing authorities on this matter is simply not enough. It is important to examine the science that underpins their claims of safety and effectiveness. And as an independent scientist, I've been doing that for 11 years. And most countries have rejected the notion of using the public water supply to deliver medication. You heard Dr. Lennon talking about the 43 of the top 50 cities in America and 350 million people worldwide. Well, that's a very distinct minority of people worldwide. Most countries do not fluoridate their water, including most of Western Europe. All these countries do not fluoridate their water. It's true that a handful fluoridate their salt, but the majority do not either fluoridate their water or their salt. Only 8 countries in the world have more than 50% of their population drinking fluoridated water. One of them, of course, being the United States, which started this program in 1945 and very quickly endorsed this by the government, the Public Health Service, in 1950, before any single trial that Dr. Lennon talked about had been completed and before there had been any significant long-term health studies. I will explain why I believe that fluoridation is not ethical, it's not necessary, it's not effective, and it is not safe. And let me be very specific about my safety claims. There is no adequate margin of safety, in my view, to protect the whole population from known health effects. Well, first of all, fluoridation is not ethical. You're allowing, with fluoridation, a local or state government to do to everyone what an individual doctor can do to no one, and that is to force them to take medication without their informed consent. A doctor is required to tell you the benefits of the practice and the downside of the practice, and here that does not happen. Fluoridation is poor medicine. You can control the concentration, that's the amount of fluoride that's added at the waterworks, but you can't control the very important dose, not milligrams per liter, but milligrams per day, which of course depends on how much water you drink, and some people drink a lot, and also the fluoride that you get from other sources. And there's plenty of evidence that many people today are being overexposed to fluoride. You know, Mother Nature experimented for millions of years to come up with the best first meal for the baby. And what she came up with was a level of fluoride which is remarkably low, 0.004 parts per million. So when you hear that one part per million is so teeny weeny weeny it couldn't hurt you, remember it's actually 250 times higher than nature intended. And that means that a woman in or a parent in Isle of Man, if you should go ahead with this, will be giving her baby, if she bottle feeds her baby, 250 times more fluoride than nature intended. At a time in the baby's life when the blood-brain barrier is not fully developed, and it's a very fragile creature in those early days, early months, early years. It's not necessary for another reason. Many dental researchers, and finally it was conceded in 1999 by the big promoter of fluoridation in the United States, the Center of Disease Control, that the benefits are topical, not systemic. In other words, it works from the outside of the tooth, not from inside the body. So in 1999, they essentially reversed 50 years of theory. because for many, many years, doctors, pediatricians were giving pregnant women tablets, they were giving babies drops before their teeth had emerged, and now we know that that was not relevant. Fluoridated toothpaste is universally available. The stuff that does work topically, everybody can get. In fact, you have to go to lengths not to get it. This is what a Nobel Prize winner said, a very special Nobel Prize winner, Arvid Carlsson, who led the successful campaign against fluoridation in Sweden. In pharmacology, if the effect is local, topical, it's awkward to use it in any other way than as a local treatment. I mean, this is obvious. You have the teeth there, they're available for you. Why drink the stuff? Is fluoridation effective? The Center of Disease Control, the American Dental Association, and the British Fluoridation Society clearly say yes. But the evidence from modern studies says no. Everything you heard from Dr. Lennon was about primary teeth, the first teeth, the milk teeth. In my view, the permanent teeth are the most important because those are the teeth you have for the rest of your life, you hope. There's no difference then in tooth decay in the permanent teeth between fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities. These are studies which have merged since 1982. Because of all these emerging studies in the literature showing no difference between fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities, a huge amount of money, I think it was $3.6 million, to really nail this once and for all. It was a very big study by the National Institute for Dental Research, a big promoter of fluoridation. And they examined the teeth of over 39,000 children in 84 communities. At this point, the National Institute of Dental Research, Brunel and Carlos, increased the sensitivity of the measurement by approximately 5, because they switched from DMFT to DMFS, that's decayed, missing, and filled surfaces. And there are on average 5 surfaces to most of the teeth in a child's mouth, but not the cutting teeth. They have 4. So you average about 100 surfaces in a child's mouth. What they found was that was on average for children 5 to 17, 3.4 decayed, missing and filled surfaces in the non-fluoridated community and 2.8 decayed, missing and filled surfaces in the fluoridated community. That's a difference of 0.6 of one tooth surface. This is the best, the largest study ever done in the United States. So all the angst about health effects and so on are all going to be taken for saving 0.6 of one tooth surface in your child's mouth. Armfield and Spencer, again, pro-fluoridation researchers, in a study of 10,000 children in South Australia, found no significant difference in permanent teeth between children who drank fluoridated water all their lives and those who drank bottled or tank water, rainwater. In 2007, this year, from researchers from the University of Palermo in Italy, said it's now accepted that systemic, as opposed to topical fluoride, plays a limited role in caries prevention. They also pointed out that modern studies have shown in Finland, Cuba, former East Germany, and British Columbia that when fluoridation has stopped, tooth decay has not gone up as predicted. Because the tooth decay has been coming down in industrial countries, probably as a reflection of two things: increased standard of living and the availability of fluoridated toothpaste are probably the two main factors. It has little to do with fluoridation. Now, the message is clear. If governments and dentists are generally concerned about tooth decay in children, then target families of low income for special attention. Do not expose the whole population to uncontrolled doses of a known toxic substance. Now, Dr. Lennon talked about how different Birmingham and Greater Manchester is. And it's interesting that one of the areas around Birmingham, of course, is Wolverhampton. Now, Wolverhampton was fluoridated in 1997. And promoters of fluoridation have said how the tooth decay has decreased. Well, from 1997 to 2002, you see the expenditure on interventions has practically doubled. So, and this is something that we've seen elsewhere. They introduced fluoridation, and then they increased the dental services. So after a few years, they claim that that is the reason. The relationship between tooth decay and parental income stands out very clearly. But the relationship, the so-called relationship between tooth decay and ingesting fluoride, does not stand out clearly at all. You look at dental fluorosis rates, you see another robust relationship, which is the relationship between dental fluorosis, mottling of the teeth. That is very clearly related to fluoride levels, but reduction of tooth decay is not. So what are the risks that we're talking about? Now, it's well established that fluoride can cause serious health problems. I've just come back from a conference in China just a few weeks ago. And the Chinese are studying people that live in high naturally fluoride areas, 2 or 3 parts per million or more. And they're studying all the health effects on the teeth, on the bones, on the brain, everything else. And similarly in India. So there's no question that fluoride causes health effects. That is not the issue. The issue is, do we have an adequate margin of safety to protect the whole population? Do we have enough to protect the whole population drinking uncontrolled amounts of water at 1 parts per million? And this population that we're trying to protect is not the average person. This population includes the very young, the very old, those with poor kidney function, the very sick, and people with poor diet, and especially those with borderline iodine deficiency, which is extremely important for thyroid function. The NRC, the National Research Council, selected the most balanced panel ever assembled to look at fluoride's toxicity. This is a key thing, because so many government studies are organized by pro-fluoridation governments, and they handpicked the panels which look at this issue. They're expecting to take a year. They actually spent 3.5 years reviewing the literature, and on March the 22nd last year, they produced this 507-page book with over 1,000 references. And the sad thing is that this is largely ignored by the promoters of fluoridation. Dr. Lennon says he has a copy in his book, but I notice he didn't cite it for anything this evening. This review is the textbook on the toxicology of fluoride. And your government, if they are going to pursue this any further, and I hope they don't, but if they do, this must be the starting point. To keep going back to the York Review, which didn't look at animal studies, biochemical studies, models, and was limited to what they could analyze by meta-analysis, is very, very short-sighted in my view. This is it. You have to respond to this. If you can't respond to the issues in here, then you have no right to go forward. The dangers that they discussed. Fluoride damages the teeth. There's a whole chapter on that, chapter 4. Fluoride damages the bone, chapter 5. Fluoride damages the brain. Fluoride interferes with the endocrine system. But the early promoters thought that at 1 part per million, they could limit dental fluorosis to 10% of the children in its very mild form. Were they successful? No, they weren't. If you look at the figures, 29.9%, 3 times higher then the percentages that they thought were going to be impacted are now being impacted in fluoridated communities. And you see, even in non-fluoridated communities, it's over 20%. So our kids are being overexposed to fluoride. Now, in 2005, it's up to 32%, not in fluoridated communities, all communities, which is an average with the non-fluoridated. So in fluoridated communities, we can assume it's approximately 40%. This prompted the American Dental Association to say to parents, if using a product that, this is baby formula, that needs to be reconstituted, parents and caregivers should consider using water that has no or low levels of fluoride. So one of the things that your government has to contemplate, if you fluoridate your water, you're going to contemplate how you can possibly educate all the parents not to use this tap water to make up formula. And you've also got to think of a way that you can provide bottled water or an alternative water supply to people of low income who cannot afford bottled water for this purpose. But the great fluoridation gamble is that you could damage the growing tooth like this, which is not disputed, without damaging any other tissue in the baby's body. No matter how much water the kids drank, no matter how much fluoride kids get from other sources, no matter their nutritional status, no matter their health status, there would be no other damage. This wasn't science. This was a religious belief. It was a hope. It was a wing and a prayer. They did not know that. Most fluoridating countries have done no scientific studies to check this out. They just keep doing endless studies on teeth. And when they say, oh, well, if there's been a problem, we would know about it by now. Oh, no, you wouldn't know about it right now if you don't do the studies. So we have to worry about not just one day of drinking fluoridated water, but what if you have 60, 70 years of your life, how much fluoride in your bones will you have accumulated? 50% each day that you accumulate from, you get from any source accumulates in the bone unless you've got poor kidney function, which you get more. I'm more concerned about the baby's developing brain because the blood-brain barrier is not fully developed at birth. And so the fluoride can get into the brain, and this is not the time to expose the baby's brain to 250 times more fluoride than nature intended. There have been 40 animal studies which shows that fluoride can damage the brain, and over a dozen human studies from China, Iran, and India. Those Iran and India have come out in the last couple of days showing that fluoride lowers the IQ of children. Varner and co-workers gave rodents 1 part per million fluoride in their water for 1 year. The exposed rodents had kidney damage, brain damage, a greater uptake of aluminium into the brain, and beta amyloid deposits, which are characteristic of Alzheimer's disease. Animal studies with Mongolian gerbils and fluoride lowered the melatonin production and shortened the time to puberty. Melatonin acts like a biological clock. It's involved with timing, the onset of puberty, onset of aging, jet lag, sleep patterns, and so on. There's a huge amount of work going on in melatonin. And the very idea that just fluoridated water could be messing around with this is pretty significant. Proponents of fluoridation counteract all these health concerns by arguing, well, they only occur at high concentrations. But what they don't say is they don't explain what they mean by high or low. That's left rather vague. And they confuse concentration with dose. This happens all the time. Concentration and dose are not the same. Dose depends on how much water you drink. There's clearly no adequate margin of safety to protect the whole population. Remember, that includes the very young, the very old, those with poor kidney function, those with poor diet, and those with borderline iodine deficiency. This is a reckless public health policy. Thank you.
That was Dr. Paul Connett, and you're listening to an edited version of the talks delivered at the meeting to debate the proposed fluoridation of the public water supply in the Isle of Man. And we finish today with just a flavour of the questions and comments from the audience at last Tuesday's meeting.
I'm Quinton Gill, MHK. I wonder, before we take too much credit for the Isle of Man government and their democratic credence, are we wasting our time and our breath and are the Manx people in having an opinion on this if the government is going to repeat the example that they had with the smoking ban, where they'll say, we know better what is best for you, public of the Isle of Man. We are the Public Health Directorate, we are the DHSS, we're the government, and we are going to just put this through anyway, whether you like it or whether you don't.
I'm the Minister, Eddie T, and I apologise for the voice. I haven't been drinking fluoridated water. It hasn't had this effect on me. I would take issue with my colleague, Mr. Gill. I am here as the political representative, as the minister of the department. I hadn't intended to speak. I just intended to listen to the debate. Contrary to the opinion in some quarters, this isn't a predetermined exercise. Well, it isn't a predetermined exercise. Regardless of what you may think, what we are doing is we are gauging public opinion, and as I said before, both on and off the record, we will respect public opinion. It's as straightforward as that. And as I said today in the House, what you've said, what you see on the can is what's inside the tin.
My name is James Osborne. I've got two young boys. They're quite young, and getting them to drink tap water is quite an art, and they just don't drink that sort of stuff, but they drink healthy juices and various things like that. Their dental health is fantastic. I have a friend with three boys. She doesn't buy juices, she makes them drink water. They've got fantastic teeth. What I think is the major thrust is more education. Whenever I drive into Douglas or Ramsey and see school children eating and drinking, they're drinking Coke and diet this and sugar this. I know both of these examples, my family, this friend's family, sweet stuff is out of the question. And it's education, and I think probably this is where it's the sugar content and additives, and I think people need educating more. I don't think we need mass medication with this fluoridation. I think it's flawed.
My name is Edward Sandy Ghost, and I have actually written to Mr. Tyr and Dr. Emerson, and I've actually failed to get some very sensible answers. But one of the points which everybody seems to be missing around here, we're an island, and we're surrounded by the sea. And this sticking fluoride in the water is a great idea, except that it actually ends up out in the sea. I checked with the Water Board, and they are at the moment treating 26 million litres of water a day. That will require an output of nearly 0.75 tonne of fluoride into the sea around the island every month. I'm just curious, has anybody actually managed to carry out a specific marine scientific study to see the effect this is going to have on what is known as the wealth of wildlife found in Manx waters? And in addition to that, I presume everybody in the room heard the radio this morning, where it was said that putting fluoride in the public drinking water supply, or the public water supply, will actually impact on the agriculture on the island, because if you water the agricultural product with fluoridated water, it's no longer organic. So the push for organic organic supplies is going to fail rather badly when we stick fluoride in the water and the marine life could be in trouble.
My name's Walter Graham. I was elected the spokesman for the councils in Northern Ireland who voted against fluoridation. We had our 3 months consultation period, and at the end of it, we had 25 out of 26 councils vote against fluoridation. We had the four Area Health and Social Services councils vote against fluoridation. We had NIPSA, the large civil servants union, vote against fluoridation. We had the two farmers unions vote against fluoridation for the reasons you've heard here tonight. We also had Queen Students Union vote against it. We had the Angling Federation vote against it. We had the Vegetarian Society against it. And we also had Shorts, the aerodynamic, the aerospace industry, threatened to pull out of Northern Ireland if fluoridation went ahead. So we had widespread opposition to this. And the reasons were quite simple. It really doesn't make any sense at all. For a start, as you heard tonight, we have a small group of children who we're all supposed to take their medicine for the rest of our lives, whether we have the condition or not. And this small group of children, they're drinking nothing but fizzy drinks. You've heard that tonight. That's what they're doing. Well, if they're drinking fizzy drinks, they're not drinking the water supply, so what's the point in putting it in for them? And the next point, which all our councils really took on board, was that you're putting fluoride in 100% of the water, right? The DOE, at least in Northern Ireland and in Great Britain, they all admit that they lose 40% of all the water in underground leaks before you even get it. So that's 40% of the fluoride going out in the environment, where it's not supposed to go by international law. So out of the 60% that's left that's coming in through the water supply, industry, and I'm counting farmers in industry, use 7/8 of the water supply. So that's 7/8 of the 60% is now gone. Of all the water you bother to fluoridate, out of the 1/8 that comes into your house, you wash your clothes, you wash it, the water the lawn, you flush the toilet, but you don't drink it. So out of the 1% of the 1/8 that's still left that's fluoridated, you're drinking less than 1% of that water supply. Now, how many children in the population as a whole have this really terrible tooth problem that we're trying to cure here? The really bad teeth is about 3% of the population. So you now got 3% of the population drinking 3% of 1% of 1/8 of the 60% of all the water you bother to fluoridate. Does this sound like a logical way to deliver a drug?
We end today's programme with those few comments from the audience recorded at last Tuesday's meeting at the Promenade Church, when the issue of whether or not to add fluoride to the Manx water supply was debated. The speakers were Professor Michael Lennon, the chair of the British Fluoridation Society, and Dr. Paul Connett, executive director of Fluoride Action Network. The meeting was arranged by the Isle of Man Campaign for Non-Fluoridated Tap Water. More of the questions, answers and comments can be heard on Perspective on Manx Radio next Tuesday evening at 6:05. The recordings were made by Andrew Beasley, and I edited the programme. I'm Roger Watterson. Goodbye.